You are listening to The Mombcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. In our 236th episode, we'll be talking about this week's comics. We'll be asking you a very important question, and we won't be asking you to marry us. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have preloaded the podcast with the anticipation of that. Sorry. And in his spotlight, James will be talking about The Book of Mr. Natural, Profane Tales of That Old Mystic Madcap by R. Crumb. The R stands for Robert.
Ah!
And the Crumb stands for, that's just his surname. And also, he's a crumb bum.
So I didn't Wikipedia this one, so I'm glad you did that. I had no idea. I just thought that was his first name. Ah!
R, the R stands for arse.
I'm joking, of course. I knew that all along.
Before we get started, because I get the feeling that despite our best efforts, quite often anything we say after the first two or three minutes just kind of gets a lot. People just like having us, having our voices around, and it's comforting. But I don't know if they're necessarily listening. So we were just wondering, if you had the choice, listener,
yeah.
This is to you, not to James. Listener, if you had the choice and you could listen to this podcast, the Mombcast.
Same podcast, no different.
Same podcast.
Just the same high quality production values and content you've always been used to.
And maybe go to the site Mom Comics as well. If you could go to that and maybe it'd be a bit higher quality than it is at the moment because it doesn't really have any content on it. But it not have a shit name. What would you want that name to be? Because we've thought about this before, and I know we've talked about it before, but maybe it sounded like we were joking.
Mm.
But it occurs to us that Momb doesn't really mean anything beyond it being James and Jane and John's surname. And and so it might be impeding people's ability, certainly our ability, to take this seriously as a geeky comic-y related podcast and a geeky related website.
And to be fair, our continuity is almost 5 years old now.
Yeah.
It's time we retconned.
It is time for a reboot.
Retcon.
Retcon's different. That'd be us going back and renaming every single episode. Okay.
And change our continuity. So my origin.
To go back and edit every single episode.
I want to retell my origin.
Okay.
And I'm running out of spotlight books. So I figure if we retcon, I can just do Tintin all over again.
That sounds like a plan. I love those Tintins.
Yeah.
I could listen to literally hours of you feeling awkward about the politics and ideology in those books.
Oh, you're going to love my spotlight this week.
Good. I think I am going to love it. So honestly, listener, seriously, we are genuinely asking, in the same way that we genuinely ask you to sometimes send us emails at
Mombcast@gmail.com.
Including audio contributions of 2 to 5 minutes about comics. And also genuinely ask you to go and rate and review us at your podcatcher of choice and tell as many people as you know who might like us to listen to us. We mean this as genuinely as that. Can you think of a decent name for our brand?
Yeah.
I think podcasts work quite well if they've got cast on the end of the name, but that's not necessary. It doesn't have to be the case. But yeah.
It should make people think insightful comic chat.
Yes.
Which will lure them into a false sense of security while they listen.
I quite liked the name 69% Geeky, but it has been brought to my attention that sounds filthy.
It does a little bit. And, you know, it just sounds like you and me. To be fair, where we're doing it mostly you and I at the moment, it's only a matter of time anyway, isn't it?
before we do, we end up doing that. I was thinking of it as a numerical, probably, mathematical value.
It'd probably be a standy uppy one as well, because I think I could lift you quite easily.
Oh, my goodness. Mm. Do you know how dense I am?
Really? Are you like a pulsar?
Yeah, and my centre of balance is fucky.
Really?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm James.
Hi, I'm James. No, I'm Nick. We've done all this already. Oh, no, Around the Mic Tonight. That's what we do. Yeah. We do this. Yeah. Around the Mic Tonight are...
I'm still James.
And I'm still Nick.
Yeah.
We are two-thirds or two-fourths, depending on... Fourths are called quarters, aren't they?
Yeah.
Of the Momb family. And we talk about comics.
Yes.
In a minute.
Yeah.
First, we're probably going to talk about our weeks a little bit. James, how's your week been? Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, it's lovely. I've been on holiday, so I can talk. That was marvellous. We were talking about planets. I had a moment with my wife. We were... You can cut this out and put it in the other show. I think it works in both. We were looking at the stars with my daughter, and my daughter said, what are stars? Brilliant. Science question. My wife dives in. They're planets.
Did she believe? She doesn't listen to this one, does she?
I've had to... No. I have now spent the last week and a half deprogramming my daughter by saying, what are stars, Scarlett? And she's just started saying suns.
It...
Fucking planets.
It doesn't sound like it's your daughter that needed deprogramming on that one.
I think it's too late for Nicola. She's too far gone, Nick.
Is it true that all stars are suns, or is it just that our sun is a star? That some stars are suns and some stars are... What?
They're all suns.
Is that right?
Our sun is a star, all stars are suns.
Is it just... Do we just call it the sun?
Not all of the bright bodies in the night sky are suns, but all of the stars... Mm. Our sons. Tell me if I'm wrong, listener. I don't think I am.
Because Neil deGrasse Tyson definitely listens to this podcast.
He does. Hi, Neil. And as does Carl Sagan from The Afterlife, which I think would have surprised him no end when he got there.
Yeah. But that's good. I like that. And I was so busy thinking about what I was going to say next that I completely spaced on your joke, which I thought was really good.
Well, that's very nice of you.
Patrick Moore.
You can leave reviews like that on iTunes or the podcatcher of your choice.
Do you think Ben Cox would be a...
Brian.
Brian Cox.
Who the fuck is Ben Cox?
I don't know. And I was going to make the joke, I wonder if he'd have turned out to be as famous as he is if his name was Barry.
Oh,
but
wow.
It turns out I got his name wrong anyway.
Yeah, he's so famous you can't actually remember his name.
I don't care. He annoys me.
He even took the shortcut to fame by having the same name as a beloved English character actor.
Yeah, but I think of Brian Cox, the actor, as someone who I think is really good, who doesn't annoy me. And Ben Cox is the Brian Cox that
true.
I find really annoying.
He looks like a Ben.
He does.
I'd like to see him do The Wonders of Kez. Oh, Kez, you're wonderful. And then just stand on a cliff looking wistfully at Kez for an hour.
Is that your Brian Cox?
Oh, Kez.
I think that's really good.
Thank you.
I can't do accents.
Very nice of you.
I can't do accents. Mm. I can't do wordplay. I can't reach things on high up shelves, but that's more of a height thing. That's not really to do with my brain and my ability to do things.
But... You do have the stature to cosplay as Man of War, the He-Man character, which not all of us do. So
no,
you
should
be very pleased. Now I've got the idea in my head.
Man of War.
I'd really like to make that.
Did he have the moustache?
Yeah, probably.
I think he did. He had a really manly moustache, didn't he? I could do that.
I think so.
I could magnum it up. There are lots of things I can't do. I did know that planets and stars aren't the same thing, though.
Good. What Nick does do is he writes beautiful prose. So, like, if you go to the Elephant Words site and look for the writings of Nick, you'll see one of Nick's skills on there, which would be nice.
He's right. Thank you, James.
It is lovely.
I also wrote a post on the Momb Comics site this week.
What comics? I'm sorry, I can't pass that beginning bit.
Momb, M-O-M-B, MOMB. It stands for Monkey on My Back.
That sounds fucking ridiculous.
I think the people who came up with it thought drugs are funny. Let's say Geek Curie is being like being on drugs.
And we were drunk. And also, I was thinking about a podcast and wanted to make the theme tune Monkey on My Back by New Spiral Carpets.
That's
and
true.
And thought that would fit really nice. Actually, if you listen back into the dim and distant past of MOMcast when I edited it, so the really shit ones, you'll notice I used it as an interstitial sting
on
a couple of occasions.
You did. I seem to recall that. Also, I suspect that you never dreamed it could become the media and cultural critique empire 236 weeks later that it has become.
Who could have imagined
you didn't know
that
you were going to be stuck with it for so long?
No, not really.
We really would like to have any...
Just one more hour of thought. It would have been enough. One more hour. That's all we needed to put into it. One more hour.
What would you have called it, though?
I don't know. A comic horn. Comic doodahs.
Comic cane.
Comic cane, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't. I think Monkey on My Back was fine.
Comic puff puff.
I don't even know what that means. Oh, because it's drugs.
Yeah, probably. Anyone fancy some comics? Yum.
So you learned that your wife doesn't really understand about stars and planets.
Her science kit, if we were doing some top trumps, and Nicholas Card would be science one.
But isn't sun just our name for our sun? Like, we're on a world, but the name of our planet is Earth. We call it the world,
We call it the sun, right? But it's a sun too.
See, why didn't we call it something better?
Well, like what? Like, wow! Fuck that top!
Yeah, why didn't we call it all that?
Yeah. Let's rebrand it. Listener, if you were looking at the sun, just like you are now, same.
Don't look at the sun.
Is what it's going to be doing is it's going to be creating the same fusion that it does now that will deliver light and heat to this planet. But you could call it something else. What would you call it? I'd call it MOMB.
I am so tired right now. It is unbelievable.
Oh, I see the mom's out today. It's nice to see, isn't it?
I'm really, really tired. Wait. You would not believe how busy I am.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you know someone who is wasting a lot of time is wasting a lot of time? Don't worry, they'll tell you they're busy. Does that work?
I don't know. That doesn't work. Are all of the catchphrases on this show, are all of the persistent ones, just stupid things that I said once? Are any of them nice, funny things that you've said?
Oh, I'm sure
they are. Or that Jane or John have said?
I don't know.
You can... I don't want to talk about my week. It's just been the same. It's the same. I've been thinking too much about depressing stuff. I posted to the MOMB Comics website a thing that I posted a cut down version of to the We Are Comics Tumblr. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. We Are Comics is a project to try and highlight how inclusive and diverse the comic audience is and should be, as a response to some of the nastier elements of fandom in the life of humanity that also happen to be represented in comics.
It's a lovely piece of positivity around comics about inclusiveness, which comics really needs at the moment. Because we living in comics, you know, which sounds a bit weird. I don't live in a comic, I live in the real world, I think, although I'm not entirely sure at the moment. But my experience, my connections to the comic world are inclusive and diverse and positive. So it's heartbreaking how comics kind of has presented itself over the past couple of weeks. So I think I know we probably both think this, but I don't want to speak for you, Nick. We Are Comics is such a heartwarmingly positive and happy thing to be happening at the moment, I think.
It's all right. No, I think it's really good. I submitted a piece that I think was probably a bit too long and a bit too rambling and off message, but the whole it's maybe not right for We Are Comics, but it's absolutely perfect for Mom Comics.
Yeah.
So I have posted that in full up on the site. So, you know, that can be another one of the really super long blog posts that just occur to me to do that nobody reads. That's fine. That's okay.
I haven't sent anything in personally because I think the last thing We Are Comics needs is a middle-aged white man going, yeah, I like comics. No shit. I might set up a hashtag no shit site and it'd be people like me saying I like comics.
Oh, why do you hate yourself so much?
Oh, well, that's a question I'm hoping someone will answer for me. Soon.
What's that? There's a term, nominative.
When your name describes your nominative determination or something.
Nominative determinism. That's basically the name Mom Comics. Cast.
Monkey on my back.
Well, no, the mom specifically. It's like the reason it's all so vague and stuff is because the name is just weird.
Why would you come up, James, with such an awkward name?
Why would
odd?
You do that? That doesn't make sense.
I get it. Although nominative determinism...
It's really hard to say.
Yeah, isn't it normally like when your name's Freddy Chop and you're a butcher?
Or Doug and you dig holes.
Yeah, you're a grave digger.
Or murderer. You kill people.
I ain't saying she's a grave digger, but I don't see her hanging about in graveyards.
No. So she wouldn't be. I mean, how could she be a grave digger if she's never in graveyards?
Well, she keeps her work separate from her social life, that's why.
I don't think I really understand.
Why shouldn't a woman be a grave digger, Nick? Get with the fucking program.
Because it's heavy work. It's not very nice. Why would they want to do something that's so morbid?
Momcast in grave-digging misogyny shocker.
How can it be misogynistic? I'm saying that women are too lovely and delicate
grave-diggers. Oh, God, we definitely need to retcon now you as a slightly more PC human being, Nick. Golly gosh.
Golly gosh, really?
Oh shit. Oh, that was a slip of the tongue. I'm sorry. I celebrate diversity. Apart from Greek Cypriots.
That's one thing I did this week. I also did a little podcast called Two Grown Men. It was a difficult one this week, I think. I think it's possibly the most serious one we've done.
And received some nice feedback, which is a shame because I thought my cheeky tomfoolery is what sold these podcasts, but apparently not.
I think everyone I've heard from, James and I kind of sort of agreed but took up opposite viewpoints about it's weird, isn't it weird how being a human is so complicated? We agreed with each other but also completely disagreed with each other.
We had strange nuanced opinions and things.
It's almost as if the world's complicated.
Yeah, it's almost like life is shades of grey.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the 50 that's prescribed by the book.
That seems like a lot of shades of grey.
It does. I think it's probably more around sort of 25 to 30.
I haven't read the book. Maybe they go into it somehow in there.
I can't believe we're doing 50 Shades of Grey again. Fucking hell. It's almost like an old Momcast standard now.
So, if we rename the podcast, we'd have to come up with new standards. We couldn't use the old Mom standards.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's true.
So,
I'd have to come up with a whole new set of voices. I'm not sure I can handle this.
So, yeah, we were basically talking about bringing up children, how to bring up your children understanding consent. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, if I remember. Basically, you should definitely look at the show notes for these shows because they tend to go into link out to things that we mention during the show, but there's also like a timeline of where we talk about certain things. So if you want to jump straight to one of my excellent 2000 AD reviews that I seem to end up doing every week, you can just look at the time and it'll say 30 minutes, probably approximately 30 minutes. And you can go and listen to it directly, or you can just skip straight to James's one of James's amazing spotlights.
Yeah, and I think there's been about three of those over the last 5 years. So
has it been 5 years?
This September.
Bloody hell! Bloody bloody hell!
Bloody blimey! 2009, wasn't it? Wasn't it? Hey,
isn't it? Wasn't it?
Wasn't it?
Should we talk about comics? Should we talk about this week's comics?
Yeah, go on. I'm game.
Yeah, well, that says maybe. It's not about you. It's about which comics I'm going to be reviewing.
No, I'm gamey. I've got a very acquired taste.
2000 AD Prog 1879, which was entirely produced in the year 1879.
Please help us rebrand as quickly as possible. This is the bit I want to retcon out.
I seem to remember John Wagner saying he wasn't going to do any more Judge Dredd. Couple of years ago.
Who's doing Judge Dredd this week?
John Wagner.
Oh,
and he did the excellent last storyline, which was kind of a revisiting of some of the themes from the series. I think it was called America in Judge Dredd magazine a few years ago, which is great if you can find the trade paperback. It was lovely seeing Colin McNeil on that strip because he's an old favourite at 2000 AD. This week starts a new Judge Dredd story called Shooter's Night, also written by John Wagner, but with art by John McCrae, which is really weird because I don't think I've ever seen him do Judge Dredd.
No.
And it's really nice.
I'm really gutted on the reading it now. I do like John McCrae.
John McCrae sometimes does. I think it's fair to say that his art veers between the more cartoony end of... More cartoony end of weighty and realistic, all the way to the outright caricaturishly loose cartoony stuff. I know that the Mars Attacks art was very exaggerated and kind of loose, I think.
It was, and he obviously he did the final part of The Boys as well, which was exactly the same.
I didn't know
it
that.
It was a more cartoony take on the work that Darrett Robinson had done ahead of that is. But I like it. I find it very satisfying. And it works very well as well, I find.
On this, I really like his art. Yeah. And I really liked him on Hitman. And I generally really like his art. But it is interesting that he's got quite a range. It's always recognisably like the shapes of the faces and stuff are clearly him. But his Dredd is really... in this instance anyway, because I don't know if he's done it before, is really solid and weighty and really nice. He uses a lot of heavy lines, but everything's really grounded, and the location work, the buildings and everything are very solid and there. There's none of that looseness he tends to do in slightly less serious subject matter. Although it's Dredd, and although Mega City is a really heightened reality, Dredd's world is really heightened reality. This is about spree shooting, this story. John Wagner has come back and he's like handling surveillance culture in his first story, which was the last one, and government corruption. And in this one, he's talking about spree shooting and that sort of culture as well. So it should be pretty interesting. It's a fierce story. It's quite violent, and John McCrae's art is just absolutely lovely in this. I don't think I've seen it look... I really like him, and I don't think I've seen it look this good. It reminds me kind of Cam Kennedy quite a lot as well, which is really nice, because he's an artist that we just haven't really... I know that in recent years he's had a bit of... He's had health issues, but he kind of seemed to stop working in comics well before his time. He did some of the best Star Wars comics and some of the best Rogue Troopers and stuff like that. I'm still really enjoying this run of Slain, confounding my expectations. It's Slain, the Britannia Chronicles, Book 1. It's Part 6 of the story, A Simple Killing. And it's written by Pat Mills, as Slain, I think, always is, with art by Simon Davis. And it's... a really creepy story, but the scale of it is much smaller. I know I've said it before, but the scale of it is much more focused than previous Slain stories. It's literally about him trying to keep this woman that he's met safe. Didn't read Sinister Dexter, don't like it, I'm afraid. And it was the final part of the excellent Jaeger Strigoi, written by Gordon Rennie with art by Simon Colby. It's set in the Rogue Trooper universe, but it's very different from Rogue Trooper, and I loved it. Really dark and weighty, and setting up the character for interesting stories in the future. Umbral issue 6 from Image. I seem to have bought a lot of Image books this week. Anyway, so Umbral number 6, written by Anthony Johnston with art by Christopher Mitten, and and I think colours by Jordan Boyd and Thomas Maurer. One of those is probably the letterer. Every part of this book is amazing, though, so I'm not really surprised that they're all on the cover because the writing is great. This issue is so much more fun than the last issue. I like the last issue because it was a real info dump of the mythology of this dark fantasy world that they're creating. But this had a bit more action and fighting and people making sarky comments to each other and stuff like that. It's really good. Christopher Mitten's art is absolutely lovely, but very loose in that way that in black and white on Wasteland is just really amazing. But in this, the colour is just really painterly and makes everything pop so nicely. And the lettering is really great as well. I know it sounds really silly, and I don't know who made this decision, but the word balloons don't finish at a point. They finish at a little squared off edge.
That's lovely.
Which I really like.
Yeah.
And also there's bits, because there's magic in this world. I'm guessing this falls to the letterer and not the artist, but I don't know for sure.
When you say there's magic in this world, do you mean this world or that world?
In the world of Umbral.
Okay, sorry.
When someone does a spell, instead of words in the speech bubble, there's like symbols, like symbology and stuff. Yeah. It's really nice. So there's thought has gone into every element of how this story is presented. But at its core, the stakes are really high, but it reminds me a lot of his Dark Materials in that the characters are quite human and easy to get to grips with and feel sympathy for. But there are these dark elements that are pervasive and are trying to take over the world, and I like it.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Supplemental to that one. When you see, because this isn't the first book where spells have been, you see people speaking in symbols.
Mm-hmm.
How does that read?
Well, this isn't like a different font. I've not seen it done like this before because, to be honest, I just scan it as – normally I just scan it as, well, that's clearly a language. I just don't understand. It's fine.
Because they're making noises. Are you not – do you not
– am I going – blah, 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 blah.
Well, in my mind, whenever I see that sort of thing, it's always mumbling. So
see, that's good. Well, in this, it's so weird because – it's so weird, man. It's so weird. I'm not even sure who that's supposed to be.
Because I think that was quite West Coast American. I think all right, you were going there a little bit, weren't you?
I can't really do voices.
No,
though,
can't.
But it's instead of just another written language, I mean the whole speech bubble is taken up with like a kaleidoscope type symbology to it.
Sure,
so it's not readable.
I'd still read it in the same way though. I'd make that character would be making a sound in my head. So I'm reading it and for me it'd be
normally I'd read it like that. Like right. When they have Doctor Strange doing it, yeah. Or something like that. In this I read it entirely as and I hadn't thought about this before, but this has just come into my head. It's a shangalalangalangalangalangalang.
Oh dear.
Shangalang. What?
Like watching that bloody BNP Party Political all over again.
That doesn't sound like any actual language.
Yeah, you tell yourself that.
Shangala, what does it sound like?
It sounds a little bit like the Bay City Rollers to me.
I don't understand. What's the reference? Well, the Bay City Rollers, racist.
We probably shouldn't go into this now, but I think they were Scottish.
Were they? So it sounded Scottish.
I don't know.
Am I going to be the reason that they finally all vote to... have they done the vote already? I'm so behind.
No, it's soon.
Is it? I'm going to be the reason they all opt to leave, aren't
they? Oh, almost certainly, yeah.
Taking all of their culture and food and stuff with them.
It's almost certainly not going to be a London-centric political class that rule their destiny that causes them to desire independence. No, it's going to be you.
Why has it always got to be about me? It's a lot of responsibility.
You arrogant son of a gun.
In all seriousness, I'm not particularly political and I don't really understand all the ins and outs of it, but I cannot fault anybody who wants to secede from our current political party. If they think they can make a go of it, they should be allowed to. That's what I reckon.
I want them to do it so I can go and move up there. Although, for my views, just listen to Billy Bragg's Take Down the Union Jack, formerly known as the Millennium Song.
If you like Scotland so much, why don't you bloody move there?
Well, I will when they're independent.
I don't know. If they've got any sense, they'll close their borders and we'll have to... There'll be all sorts of requirements.
I've got a very Scottish-sounding surname. I'll be golden, mate.
Gilly as in Gilly Mop. I know, I listened.
I'll turn up and go, oh, Kai, you all right? You going to let us in? Oh, yeah, I'm Scottish and that. Got a tartan. I kind of knew. Aye, fuck off.
Was that your actual
What do you reckon?
Accent?
Not bad, eh?
No, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I assimilate in no time.
Thank you for covering while I found the credits for this book.
Is that what I was doing?
Yeah. I really don't know what came out this week. I think Deadly Class came out this week. It's Deadly Class number 4. It's written by Rick Remender with art by Wes Craig and colours by Lee Luffridge. The reason I want to mention this is because it's so completely different from the previous issues. It's ridiculous. Deadly Class is like Harry Potter for murderers. It's set in it's set in 1980. I mean, the story is about like Hogwarts for murderers. I don't mean that if you're a murderer, you'll like this.
I don't care. I really want to see that on the trade.
It's like cover Harry
now.
Potter for murderers.
Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, if only we had reach.
Maybe this is what gets us reach. I don't know.
You never know.
But it's like Hogwarts for murderers. This basically, the first issue and the second issue introduced us to a young, teenage character who lived on the streets and was rescued from his situation by these mysterious and murderous people. I think one of them kills a policeman while they're trying to rescue him. Set in the 1980s, and there's lots of period details to it. It turns out that he gets taken away to this place that's like an academy where... organized criminals and psychopaths from all around the world send their kids to this place to learn the family business.
It's really interesting to me, though, that your go-to is Hogwarts,
mm-hmm.
when, to me, that just sounds like Xavier's School for Gifted Children.
Or Eton.
Or actually, now you mention it, a lot more like fucking Eton. Yeah.
It's like Eton, but for psychopaths instead of sociopaths.
No, it's like Eton for people who are less psychopathic and sociopathic.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know.
Bloody ruling classes. May the first today, Nick. Out the workers.
I'm not a psychiatrist or a sociologist, so I don't really understand what's going on now.
Sorry.
But this issue and the previous issue, the teens in this particular class had all been sent out with the homework of they had to find someone who deserved to be killed and kill them. And so the previous issue was all about the main character and this unlikely alliance he's ended up forming with, because none of the other kids like him when he turns up, because most of them are kids from... you know, these organized crime families and stuff like that. And he's clearly just this street rat who turns up. They're not that happy with him. So you got that weird American high school. In I think the first or the second issue, you get that weird, the scene that happens in every high school drama comedy where the new kid gets, someone takes them through the dining hall and points out all the different cliques. But it's weird because it's in this school where they're all there to learn how to be murderers. And then in the third issue, they get sent out on this mission. And in the fourth issue, things kind of go pear-shaped in the third issue. So it starts out with you thinking the main character's getting punished for that, and he kind of is. But... actually, the framing device lets on that that isn't what this issue is going to be about. It's effectively Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And there's even a reference to Hunter S. Thompson's Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It's the story of...
the film or...
the book, I guess.
All right.
Well, it's about the journey rather than the politics. The premise of this issue is that... a bunch of the kids at this school are going on a road trip to kill one of their parents because he's an asshole. But they're going on this trip to, I think he's in Las Vegas. They take a detour to go via a Grateful Dead concert, not because they're hippies. It's like the 1980s. Not because they're hippies, but because they want to score some acid. They're basically taking all the drugs in the world. Like, that's their mission, because they're teenagers who have a nice car and they're heading to Las Vegas and money doesn't seem to be any object. So that's their mission, is to get fucked up as well as to do this thing. It's a road trip, you know?
Oh, I know.
And I really wanted to mention this to you, James, because this is something we've talked about a bit before, about theoretically if we had had slightly lost youths back when we were younger, but not in any way that, you know, could be held against us now, obviously. There is a sequence in this that is basically a drug-related mishap that lasts for several pages. And I don't know how this would play to someone who had never really had those experiences when they were younger, but it's to me, I was reading it thinking, I wasn't expecting this book to amuse me as much as it is right now. There's a feeling of nostalgia to it that is obviously for an era that I wasn't old enough in the mid-80s for any of this stuff. But alongside the darker undercurrents of the fact that these kids are all really messed up and murdery, it's kind of the situations they're in are kind of funny, and we're seeing some of the relationships between them start to form, and it's really good. If you can find the first few issues of this, it's really worth picking up. With each issue, though, I have found it easier to recommend going and getting all of them. I think this issue was a really unique thing. It's really, really nice. The cover, I don't know if they've got variants on this, but I just noticed, I wasn't that fussed by the cover to begin with. I thought the... it's written by Rick Remender with art by Wes Craig and colours by Lee Luffridge. I should have mentioned that before. I don't think I did. The cover looked really nice, but I hadn't really taken in how interesting a use of space there is on it. It's all the rear view mirror on the car.
That is a really lovely cover.
And I registered that the rear view was there, but I didn't register that there was other stuff that was pertinent to the story going on that around
looks,
it. So,
I'll tell you who that looks like. That looks like, Sean Murphy.
Yeah, it does a bit. Mm. And actually, there's a lot in this too. I actually like the art in this a little bit more than I like his art. It's much looser. I can see that, definitely. Mm. I really like that. The one book that I know came out this week and that I really, really liked, it's called Southern Bastards. It's number one. It's $3.50 from Image. All of the books I bought this week were from Image. It's written by Jason Aaron with art by Jason Latour. And I haven't read a lot of Jason Aaron. I've got to get back into Scalped because that was him.
He's a racist masterpiece.
That'll get
retconned out, don't worry.
There's probably a name for the sort of... It's kind of... I want to call it backwards noir, but I don't think that's a really good name for it. But it's... There's a kind of a sub... It feels to me there's a sub-genre that... a lot of Elmore Leonard's stuff that isn't set in cities kind of fits to the justified stuff like that, and Scalped also fits into, but also this, the stuff that's happening away from the cities in the US but still has that sort of crimey, noir-esque, pulpy feel to it.
Blanc.
Hmm?
Blanc.
No, I don't. It's not the opposite of noir.
Oh, right.
It's kind of...
What's grey in French?
It's kind of that sort of grimy anti-hero protagonist stuff, but rather than him being a private detective in the middle of a city, he's like a marshal. In the case of Justified, he's a marshal who's visiting all of these weird hill people places and backwards places and moonshiners and stuff like that. And in Scalped,
Coen-esque.
Well, yeah, maybe. I tend to think of, interestingly, Fargo. The first episode of Fargo was on this week, and I quite like that. But kind of, but a little bit more grimy than even that is. Because Fargo's, the Coens are very structured and poised. Their stuff's very poised, but this has that feeling that literally anything could happen. this, Jason Aaron and Jason Latour on this, are telling a story about a guy who has to go back to the town he grew up in, where his father was the sheriff. And the last time he was in this town was in the 70s, I think, or the 80s, when his father died. He hasn't been back in town for 40 years. So he's an older guy. The sort of character you don't tend to see that much in stories like this. He's obviously much older. You can tell he kind of looks after himself, but and there's a suggestion that he used to be like a baseball, a school athlete or whatever. But it starts out very... There's lots of foreshadowing, but it's very slow and kind of sad. He's had to come back to the town because his uncle's been living in his old family home since his father died. But his uncle's now gone into a home because obviously he's very old. So he's having to go... The scene's set very early on that he's having to go to the house and just tidy it all up so that they can, like, take the stuff that they need to take away and sell it on. Very quickly in this interesting little sequence where he's driving past the welcome sign to the place, and you just see this really mean dog taking a dump right next to the sign. It just sets the scene that this isn't a nice place. This isn't a place where people are healthy, have a healthy attitudes to life.
It's a very clever image to use. There's very few things as dispiriting in life as watching a dog take a shit.
And it's a really scruffy, angry dog. It like barks at the car as it goes past and stuff.
Taking an unsupervised crap somewhere it shouldn't is quite a dispiriting thing to watch.
And so there's kind of something slightly transgressive about that as well, because it's a butthole shot of the dog. It's not like suggestive. It's just really a dog taking a shit, which has that preacher, I guess, fits into that same sort of thing I'm describing about the... Although there were supernatural elements to that, it was very, like, pulpy as well.
Oh, absolutely.
And maybe a bit idealising of a part of the world that isn't necessarily ripe for idealising.
Highly idealising,
This doesn't really do that. The only character who isn't apparently a complete scumbag is the guy who's come home. And he gets to the house. His father looms large in the first few scenes as both a local hero. He was the sheriff who famously fought a lot more people than he should have been able to with his stick. His main weapon was his stick. It's like a baseball bat that got really knackered. His dad was like a local hero, but you get this sense that his dad was also a complete bully. Mm. So he's not happy to be back in town, this guy. And his father's buried in the grounds of the... This all happens in the first few pages. So, but this is a motif that really... It gives you a sense of how the storytelling works in this. It's very grounded, but his father is buried in the grounds of the house. And so there's a gravestone, but his father was buried with the stick that he was famous for using on wrongdoers. And that stick has grown in the 40 years into this giant tree that towers over the house and over the grave. And so it's quite realistic, but it's also kind of quite on the nose imagery right there. But as bad as uncomfortable as he feels being in this town, it kind of, when he goes into town and goes into one of the diners, he ends up getting wrapped up in an awful lot more. At this point, because the town was bad when he lived there before, it's symbolically speaking, well, not symbolically and literally speaking, got a lot worse in his absence. And that's clearly one of the themes. This was a place that he left for a good reason when he was younger. And it's got, in the way that places get worse in your memory and then you go back and visit them and they seem smaller and somehow worse when you go back to them if you didn't like them very much. That's happening in the way his characterization is, but it's also a fact. It's violent and it's nasty, and he gets dragged into it by nothing more than his sense of not being able to stand by and watch something awful happen that everyone else in the town has just got used to. Now, I'm making it sound very lofty. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's basically, at this stage, it's difficult to know how long this book's going to last. It could be that he ends up being the guy who returns, and it's a long-form thing about redemption or him staying and sorting things out, maybe. It could be a really short story. It's got this... It's basically like those action movies where, like Roadhouse or I think, is it Walking Tall, the one with The Rock or something, where someone ends up in a town that they have a past relationship with, or maybe they don't have a past, but it's run by corrupt people, and that they end up being the one person who just through pluck and a sense of right and wrong ends up doing something about it. That sounds, it's quite cheesy, but it's also a motif I really like. It's like a, it speaks to a sort of a pragmatic heroism that that appeals to me, you know. But it's also clearly being done by these guys who are very interested in telling it in quite a unique way. The art is really, really lovely to look at, but it's quite rough and ready and very stylized. And the writing uses lots of motif and it's got this brooding feeling to it. It isn't like he comes to town and you get through a phone call, you get the complete info dump about what went on with his dad and all of that stuff. You find that all out through the story, and it feels like kind of like a film like Walking Tall if John Carpenter had made it or something. There's a clear auteur's approach to what's going on here, which I guess is kind of similar to Scalped. That wasn't just a straightforward exploitation story for all that. I know you had a reaction to it. It was quite...
A bit of a naive one, I think, in hindsight.
Well, I don't know. But I mean, it was a naive approach or your reaction?
No, my reaction.
I don't know. Sometimes you've got to trust your instincts, didn't you?
I stick with it because it amuses me.
But I really liked this. It reminded me a lot of things I really like. So, but something I'm not necessarily reading in comic form at the moment. There are a lot of really good crime comics, and they're basically westerns recast in the present day. You know,
yeah.
So there's this, and there's Dead Body Road, I think, which the most recent issue came out in the last couple of weeks as well, and books like that, they all have this I'm gonna stick with Backwoods Noir. I'm quite happy with that.
Backwoods, WOOD.
Yes,
I thought you said Backwards. That's backwards. Why I said Blanc.
Backwards Noir,
because
black backwards is white,
if you like.
Okay. And it kind of, I couldn't not enjoy Roy. This. I couldn't not enjoy this when I love shows like Justified and Banshee, which are kind of person grudgingly ends up in a small American town and has to just make do sort of thing. It really appeals to me. It's the most grubby side of the American dream, and it just appeals to me completely. Anyway, so that was the comics I bought this week. It isn't all of the comics I bought this week, but it's all of the ones that I wanted to talk about.
Taste.
A little taste of soupçon.
Which is very popular, isn't it?
It's little French.
Soupçon. Oui.
Hi, Momcast. It's Peter Hammerson here, calling from the sunny southeast of Ireland. Today I want to talk about the Pet Avengers. Marvel's heroic animals team up to fight crime and defend the Earth from cosmic threats only they can deal with, which is a fairly niche target. The team, teleporting inhuman puppy Lockjaw, the Frog of Thunder, Puddle Gulp, intergalactic dragon, Lockheed, super-powered bouncing cat, Hairball, Aunt May's dog, Ms. Lion, seriously, the saber-toothed king of the savage land, Zabu, and an actual Avenger, sort of, Redwing. Now, my reading of the Pet Avengers consists of two miniseries and a one-shot. Firstly, Lockjaw and the Pet Avengers 1-4, which features the Infinity Gems and Thanos, and Avengers vs. Pet Avengers 1-4, which features dragons, both by Chris Eliopoulos and Ig Guara, And also the Tales of the Pet Avengers one-shot, which was by various different creators. All nine issues have very strong stories. Characterization is constant but allows room for development. The art is lovely. The animals are realistic but retain their kinetic energy and fluidity. There's no stiffness in them. It's a fun, funny read. There are good jokes, but it's not too silly. It fits within the wider Marvel universe. On the negative side, Avengers vs. Pet Avengers gets very slim at times. Not much seems to happen. However, this is because space has been taken from plot and dialogue and has been given to the art, which handles mass battle scenes clearly and gives enough space to the dragons to give an excellent sense of their vast size. Overall, excellent writing and art. Lockjaw and the Pet Avengers, Tales of the Pet Avengers, and Avengers vs. Pet Avengers are nine issues that are well worth an hour of your time. Thank you.
Awkward middle bit.
Awkward. Avec Rob Liefeld.
Non.
Toquez-vous.
Non.
About the Deadpool.
Écoutez-les moi. Non.
Firstly, non-comic related. I couldn't help myself. The Stockholm Syndrome kicked in. I saw the picture that has done the rounds on the internet of the cast of the new Star Wars film.
Aww.
Sat around, and I actually got butterflies in my stomach.
I really trust J.J. Abrams because I really like that first Star Trek film. I didn't so much like the second one for other reasons, but it's I really like that first Star Trek film. I think this is going to be good. Disney don't tend to make really bad films, so it's probably not going to be another Phantom Menace. But I have to be honest, everyone's getting really excited about the original cast being there, but I just don't. I just keep picturing them all doddering around the screen, and I don't know what it's going
to
be like.
I think I was talking to someone about it. It feels like home. It's been with us all of our lives. It's like a Star Wars at this point has become a comfort blanket. I was talking to someone the other day. I said, I'll watch 1, 2 and 3. I can't stand 2 and 3, and I'm not massively keen on 1. But I'll watch them over and over again because I'm in a universe that makes me feel comfortable and I'm happy inhabiting, because it's the one I used to imagine as a 7-year-old kid in my bedroom. So I don't know.
Is it a bit like a comfort blanket that your parents gave to you and left you with for years and years and years, but then when you hit a certain formative age, they wove barbed wire into it, and then when you just got used to the barbed wire, I'm referring to the special editions, then they set fire to it while it was on you?
Yeah, something like that, I guess.
So
top lols to Chris Eliopoulos, though, for his very quickly photoshopped version that was covered in Lens Flare.
Apparently Martin Eden really badly photoshopped himself into it as well.
Oh, well done, Martin. I'd really like to see that. I haven't seen that. That would amuse the crap out of me.
It might not have been photoshopped. It might just have been stuck a picture of himself on it. It's a black and white picture, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, his face is in colour on it. It's hilarious.
Oh, brilliant. Or more sepia tones. And very quickly, unfortunately, it's time for another dreadful Momcast obituary. Found out yesterday that the longtime Mad Magazine editor, Al Feldstein, died. He was basically the editor for the majority of, I don't know whether you call it the golden age of Mad, but certainly sort of like at the height of maybe Mort Drucker, Dave Berg, et al., at the height of their careers. And was also, I think, involved in the Seduction of the Innocent trials, along with William Gaines.
William Gaines, yeah.
Who obviously was the founder and so forth of Mad Magazine. So, obviously, he hasn't been editor for a little while, but it's very, very sad that, I guess, one of the guys that made Mad the institution that I love and has become passed away. So it's very sad news.
He must have been working on it when we first encountered Mad, because that goes back to our childhoods.
Absolutely. Well, I got into Mad in the early 80s, but started going back and reading older stuff You'd go into charity shops and you'd pick up these weird old comics, and I'd search out Mad. And I have to be very careful at comic book conventions and comic marts, because I still want to buy old copies of Mad, and I don't know why. I'm happy to collect the comic books I collect, but I'm really funny about collecting anything of a different size. It's very odd. They don't make boxes for it readily available, I guess.
Was it Mort Drucker who used to do the
parodies? Yeah, it was.
Because
yeah.
Some of those really stick in my head.
Oh, good, yeah.
The Doctor Who one in particular, which referenced Peter Cushing and was just... I can't really remember the jokes, but the art was just amazing. Anyway, that's going off the point.
The one always sticks in my head every time. If I think, even now, and obviously I've read Mad on and off pretty consistently since the early mid-80s. But whenever I think about it, I always think of the Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Oh, yeah.
The Search for a Plot.
I remember
just
that.
For some reason.
They stick in your head, don't they?
Yeah, big time.
Yes, that's very sad. Bob Hoskins also died.
Which is very, very sad.
But...
poor Luigi.
Yeah, poor Luigi. I haven't seen Mario Brothers, you know.
Have you not? That's
probably
great.
My tribute to him, is I haven't seen Mario Brothers.
That's great. He also made some really good films.
I need to watch The Long Good Friday, because I haven't seen it.
I've seen it very, very long time ago.
It's a very, very long film. Well, it's a very, very long Good Friday. What else? Free comic book day this weekend.
Yes. You'll be listening to this, if you listen to it on the first day, you can get hold of it on the Friday, the day before free comic book day. We're going to be in FP, Southampton, all day.
Yes, Forbidden Planet, Southampton. We'll be there from early. Definitely me and James.
Maybe others. Maybe Jane, maybe Steve.
I have a sneaking suspicion that a certain actually nice Greek comic person is going to be there.
That would make me very happy.
But I don't know. I don't want to announce it because I haven't heard it from him specifically. But
okay. So
I probably shouldn't have mentioned it. But yes, Free Comic Book Day, we'll be down there. Apparently more Free Comic Book Day comic books than ever before. Not than ever, because they can't know how many there are going to be next year.
Making the recording even more difficult on a day, because we like to read and then review as we go through. We managed to get, half a dozen done last year.
If there's only the two of us there, maybe we can be a bit fluid about it. We don't have to cover everything, do we?
And I'll probably be there around about opening time. I don't know. I'd quite like to get my hair cut before I came down. I used to have a buzz cut. Basically, I used to have almost a skinhead, didn't I, Nick? And
yes.
I've grown my hair recently, but it worries me that if I leave it for a month, it starts to look a bit mushroomy and I look a bit like Terry Wogan.
You look lovely.
Thank you.
But then I think Terry Wogan's lovely.
Oh.
You're doing all the accents today.
That's my Terry Wogan.
That's really good.
Oh.
Two-syllable Terry Wogan. Oh.
Oh.
Oh, then.
Oh.
Other stuff. So Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah.
Do you want me to explain the comiXology thing?
Well, I know that there's a problem, but I'm a lazy bastard. I haven't really looked into it that much. I was hoping, Nick, you might explain to me what the dealio is with the comiXology.
As I understand it, since Amazon took over comiXology, comiXology being a business, but Amazon being a big corporate business that people think big corporate businesses are bad. But so Amazon bought comiXology and people have been waiting to see what that meant. A lot of them assuming that they were going to end up knackering comiXology completely. And what happened this week was the new version of the comiXology app came out.
All right.
You kind of had to update to it because I think the old version broke very quickly.
Okay.
And what now is the case with the comiXology app is that on iOS... you can't do in-app purchases anymore.
Oh.
And so you have to go to... I mean, you can still go to the comiXology site on your... Yeah. You know, if you bookmark it, you can still go to it on your browser on there. And I think the comiXology site is relatively good on phones. I don't know, because we know how I feel about digital, like buy to rent... No, pay to rent comic services.
I've used it on iOS on an iPad and found it a really pleasant experience. I bought
the site or the app?
The app. I bought a few on iOS. I've never used the site on iOS.
I don't think it's too bad. I think it's okay.
Fine. Most web browsers are fine on an iPad.
And on Google Play, this got pointed out to me after I was a bit pithy about it last night. On Google Play, apparently they have shut down the ability to pay using Google Bucks or whatever it's called, using Google Play's payment service. But you can still put in your PayPal information.
Or so that's a problem if you're on Android, I assume. You'd be more likely to use that.
Well, okay. You can still do in-app purchase on Android. You just can't use Google's payment process, which, stops you being able to use gift cards.
And in the same way, you can't use Apple's payment process then, can you? Because you can't do it on iOS.
No.
So it's kind of similar, is that?
On Apple, on iOS devices, I don't think it is that similar. But other people clearly feel that, well, it breaks the app for them anyway, in both cases. So in both apps, you can still read anything you've bought.
Okay.
It's just on iOS, you can't use the app to pay.
Mm-hmm.
You can't buy stuff on the app because they have stopped that functionality. Now, the reason they've done that, well, people are theorizing wildly about why they've done that. A lot of people are assuming it's because Amazon want to knock out Apple. Somehow they want to destroy Apple in this area, in this field. But I think you don't have to look much further than the fact that Apple apparently take 30% of the way their model goes. I don't know what it takes to actually get an app onto their app store. But one way that they make revenue is any in-app purchases, which they've very much encouraged app developers to include. They get 30% of. So Apple, I don't know if they get a cut when you buy Comixology app, or the Comixology app maybe is even free. I don't know.
The app is free.
But they get 30% of every single penny you spend in there.
Well, I did not know that. That's a lot of money. We've spoken about how irritating it is, how expensive comics are on Comixology. I wonder if that maybe has had an impact on the price point. Well, I mean, I know there's also... as I understand it, prices have been kept in inverted commas. No, not even inverted, artificially high, because you do not have the distribution costs and digital. So that brings down your cost to produce. Therefore, if it costs as much as the physical product, it is artificially high.
Yeah.
But I understood that was really as much as anything to try and support retailers.
Yeah. That's fairly... Yeah, I'm not even sure that's rumour at this point. I think that's... the reason they've given for keeping the prices high. It might have had something to do with keeping prices up. Actually, I think as much as anything, because the Comixology, the prices on their site and on Android devices and on when you're on your computer are exactly the same as if you buy it in the app. I think that they were probably just happy to swallow the cost, because when Comixology is starting out, even though they sell, they're responsible for almost every digital, a huge percentage of the digital comics that sell online are sold through Comixology. It's almost negligible compared to what they sell, what other people sell.
Whenever I've purchased online, I don't even really think about going anywhere other than Comixology.
So Comixology didn't have a monopoly on buying comics online, but it's close to.
They're the Amazon.
Yeah,
they aren't they, of digital comics, arguably.
But still, they're smaller. Like, they would have been a small thing. And when they were starting out, losing 30% to 30% of every sale that goes through the App Store would have been balanced out by the fact that having an app on Apple devices would immediately put them in front of an awful lot more people, because the buying power there is quite great. So, and this is conjecture, obviously. I don't really know. I'm not an expert on this. But I imagine the 30% you give Apple for every sale in your app seems like an okay price to pay if you're a small app developer who doesn't have their own platform to promote or distribute your software.
Of course.
And also, you don't have your own purchasing. You know, you don't have your own way of taking payments off people in place. So it's okay if you're a small developer paying Apple that 30%. I imagine there's something similar going on with the difference on Android stuff is that you can still do in-app purchases. It's just you can't use Google money anymore. Now, that's when I was told about that, that seemed a bit strange to me because I have never used Google money for anything other than buying apps. I just wouldn't do it because if I use if it's something if it was something like an Amazon site or if it was an online vendor who also had an app, well, it's probably one that I also use on my desktop. So they'd already have I'd already be using PayPal or my credit card with them anyway. I don't use Google money for anything other than apps. It's just a convenient way of paying for them through the Google infrastructure. So it didn't occur to me that people would really be using that. But you can still buy stuff in the Google app, in the Android app, because you can still use PayPal, you can still use credit cards. Apple don't give you that choice. You pay them the 30% if you buy anything in their app, however you pay for it. I assume you pay through their infrastructure, but I don't know. But they take a 30% cut of every sale that happens through their stuff. So that's why it's been completely broken. In-app purchase has been completely broken on Apple devices. And that's where the problems... If you read the headlines on blogs that have been talking about it and news outlets that have been talking about it, it sounds like everyone is outraged by this. But actually, it's Apple consumers who are using the iOS stuff. Now, that's quite a huge... That's a decent percentage of people.
Likely to be the majority of Comixology app users.
I don't know what the market share is for. I honestly don't know what the market share is for.
Well, I think given that it's only recently that Android sales have got to Apple iPhone, iOS device. Sales.
I honestly don't know.
I think that's only happened recently. So it's likely that iOS users are going to be. Maybe not in a massive majority, but...
I don't know. I can't speak to that, but...
I'm going to put my hat on it and say it's likely.
Okay, but essentially, they haven't broken mobile... They haven't broken Comixology. They haven't broken a mobile device buying comics through Comixology on your mobile device. They've just stopped you being able to do it through the app. And... There are lots of conspiracy theories as to why Amazon would do that. But I don't think you have to look much further than you can get away with taking a 30% cut of all purchases if people have to use your service to do it. But Amazon are huge. They have their own payment. You know, they have their own payment infrastructure. They probably feel like they don't have to pay rent to another corporation. And this is the problem. I mean, actually, there's a Back to Work this week, despite it being a productivity podcast, was pretty much all about this issue. And those guys are very iOS device centric. But even they spent a big chunk of the podcast complaining about how this breaks functionality. But at a couple of points, they did point out that one of the things that happens on the internet now is people mistake how they feel about something emotionally as a consumer with actual business practices and why decisions might have been made. And it's quite possible that Amazon weren't doing this. It's quite likely, actually, that Amazon weren't doing this deliberately to piss off Apple consumers. It's likely that it's difficult for them to swallow giving 30% of all of their purchases to an organization when they can do the same thing themselves.
Well, I think that's wholly understandable. Why would you want to give an unnecessary 30%?
So much land, you don't pay rent.
What I would say, I mean, and I've used Comixology, I'm not a heavy user, I've purchased through Comixology via the app in the past. I also use, when I buy from Amazon, I also use the Amazon app, and I'm able to make payments in-app for my Amazon products. What my only confusion would be, and you know, it doesn't break it. It's fine. You go to the website, and I think early on with Marvel, you had to do that. The Marvel app, as I remember, mm-hmm. I know certainly when you had the codes, you had to go online with Marvel, mm-hmm. redeem the codes online, and then they'd appear in your app. I found it clunky a bit, mm-hmm. and someone like me who's so lazy, it's almost defies belief. May well put me off buying from Comixology,
yeah, and I think
but
that's
I'm not.
The question at
that. I'm not majorly sold on it as well, but it is less convenient. I am now less likely to use it as a result. However, I am confused as to why, at present, I'm not able to set up an account in the app in the same way that I've got an Amazon account that's linked in my app that I make.
I
don't understand enough about how it works as to why they've completely removed the ability to pay. Because I would have thought the no-brainer would have been, do you have an Amazon account?
Yeah.
Would you like to link your Comixology in your Amazon account, maybe?
I don't know.
I know, although I didn't go into any great detail, I know one of our friends and regular listeners, Peter Hammerson, did a series of tweets about his experiences and how he felt about it. And he still seemed to be quite Comixology positive, and I'm sorry if I'm misrepresenting you, Peter, but it'd be quite interesting to go back and reread his, because I think he had some, you know, quite positive thoughts about still doing it. And also, some interesting thoughts, I think, if I remember rightly, about potentially meaning that his spend was maybe more thoughtful than it was when he purchased books in-app. So potentially it'd be easier to control what you're spending.
Yeah, no, that all makes sense. And I mean, it's easy for me to have an opinion on all of this because I don't love Comixology. I do quite like Amazon. I don't love Comixology, and I don't really use Apple devices. So, and I don't adore my Android device. I don't tend to read digital comics on any of those either. So, I don't think it's that difficult. Thing is, it is so much easier to buy comics on a digital device now than it was 2 years ago or four years ago.
Much easier than 10.
Yeah.
But what I would say as a casual Comixology user is I am now somewhat less likely to use it on a casual basis. Mm-hmm. If I just, for example, you know, I picked up a sort of series of Star Trek books that I fancied reading that I wouldn't have otherwise bought. I'm probably only going to use Comixology if I really desperately want to read a book and I've no other way of getting hold of it easily.
Yeah.
But it's not going to stop me using it full stop.
I am...
Not being able to remember what my username and password is when I go onto the website is more likely, actually.
I think it's really similar to what's happened with the Kindle app as well. So although you said about the Amazon site, I don't know how that's working, but the Kindle app, I think, has been like this for a while on iOS devices. The thing that, as I said, as someone who doesn't use Comixology and doesn't use iOS devices and by whom Amazon have done okay... Because I sell a lot of stuff on Amazon.
Yeah, I'm fine with Amazon.
And they've always been pretty good at sending stuff out to me when I want it and stuff like that, despite the odd issues they've had with Kindle. With Kindle, that are part of... I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago when we talked about them acquiring Comixology in the first place. There are issues... There are always going to be issues with you using a service where you are paying for the license to something rather than the thing itself.
Yeah.
And those have come up with a Kindle before. But they've happened with Comixology through iOS before as well. So, I don't know. But it seems to me that people are really urgently trying to – a few people are urgently trying to take sides on this to complain about who's broken what. And Amazon have ended up being the people that people say are breaking it. Yeah. But you're basically choosing between two massive corporations,
both of
whom want to make their money and both of whom, like, 30% is a decent-sized cut to be asking for. And Amazon clearly have their reasons for, like, doing what it is they do as well. I don't know.
But people like to take binary sort of positions, though, don't they? I do.
You know my position on this? My ultimate position on this is Yes, it's really, really bad that some people are having difficult times buying digital comics at the price that they tend to go out on the shelves in retail. Did you see the Humble Bundle offer this week?
I heard about it. I'm not sure what it was.
Humble Bundle have been doing, and this is why, you know, Comixology and Amazon, there's not a monopoly going on there at all. Certainly not as big a monopoly as Diamond Comics, being the people who supply all comics to all UK and US retailers. That's a monopoly that's been there for 20 years and no one's done anything about it.
So I wonder what the percentage is there.
More than 20 years, actually. But Humble Bundle, they've been doing video games for a little while. It's like they tend to be cheaper, smaller video games. You pay what you want. You get, they'll normally put four games in a bundle or three or four games in a bundle, and they've got lots of Android games and these bundles as well. Each week or however often, they'll have a bundle of four items, and you can pay what you like for those four items. But if you pay more than the average, you get a couple of extra bonus items, a couple of extra bonus games or two or three extra bonus games. And everything's DRM-free. It's all lovely. Okay. They started doing audiobooks a couple of weeks ago as well. I think audiobooks or maybe just, you know, maybe just digital books a couple of weeks ago. And there's you can choose how much of it you want to go to the developers. There's like little sliders. You can choose how much of it you want to go to the developers, how much of it you want to go to the people who made the thing in the first place. So how much you want to go to Humble Bundle, how much you want to go to the developers of the games, and how much you want to go to a couple of charities that they've chosen as well. Okay, so you've got a lot of control of how much you choose to pay. They're selling an awful lot of items. This week they did a deal with Image, and they've got, I can't remember exactly what they are. I think it's three or four recent Volume 1 trades of Image books, including Lazarus, Morning Glories, I can't remember the others. It's mostly books I already had. So East of West, Lazarus, Choose in there, Saga's in there, Morning Glories is in there. You get four of them for whatever you want to pay. And then if you pay more than the average, you get another three. So Saga's in the extra three, and I think Chew might be in the extra three. And then if you pay over $15, you get, which is unusual, they don't normally do this, I don't think. If you pay over $15, you get the first volume of Walking Dead. The trade paperbacks, this is, not the issues.
Oh, no, the Walking Dead's like catnip to some people.
Which is weird, because if you haven't already, and this is weird, the first volume of The Walking Dead and the 20th volume of The Walking Dead. Not the volumes in between.
Yeah, but that captures both ends.
Of up to the point of the 20th. Yeah, no, that's true, I suppose. And when I paid, it was $6.50 I paid for the seven trade paperbacks. I wasn't going to pay...
Walking Dead been going on for 10 years.
Yeah, something like that.
Jesus Christ.
But I think that weird Walking Dead offer is driving up the price, because when I looked at it yesterday, it was $9 for the seven trades.
It's not that weird if it's driving up the price, is it?
No.
I think you mean that genius Walking
Dead offer. It's really good. It's a really good idea. But check this, man. That was a bit urban. These comics, these digital comics, you can download them in a PDF, or you can download them in a HD PDF, or you can download them in an EPUB file, or in a CBZ, or in a CBR. And it's like all DRM-free.
I like CBR.
It's all completely DRM-free.
Hmm.
So, you know, comics priced for disposability. They seem to be selling an awful lot of them as well. Mm. Check it out. Check out the Humble Bundle. It's really, really good. It's not free comics, but it is really, really cheap comics. And if you only want those first four, then that's like you can pay really as little as you want to. And I don't think anybody's going to complain if you do, because frankly, they're selling a few. I think it's doing okay.
A penny.
And hopefully this will be going quite well. The funny thing is, I don't think the Humble Bundle people can have known this was going to, or Image, maybe Image did, actually probably Image did, but the Humble Bundle people probably didn't know that Amazon were going to shut down in-app purchases on iOS and make Comixology seem like a slightly less decent way of getting your digital comics. But it's genius.
Serendipitous timing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you want to do your spotlight?
Yeah, it'd be nice and quick because really, this week's what they called spotlight is moot.
Moot.
Because I said,
well, how long do you need?
I said, well, I don't know. We'll see. Probably about 5 minutes. Okay. I probably said all I really need to say about how I feel about Robert Crumb to a certain extent. When I reviewed Felix the Cat, I mean, Mr. Natural is a very different character-ish. He's certainly more likeable than Felix the Cat. But obviously they're both made by a creator who I both very much enjoy and who very much concerns and bewilders me at the same time. He is an interesting and enigmatic fellow, isn't he?
Mr. Crumb.
Yeah, and if you've not seen the documentary that was made a few years ago about him, it is well worth searching out. He is really delightfully unusual.
I find it quite depressing. He's clearly got some monstrous elements to him, which are very easy to deride and be disgusted by. But then you hear about his family, and there's clearly something else going on in that gene pool.
You meet his family. There are several sections where he's at home with his brother. Very unusual.
It's fascinating. It's a fascinating documentary.
And he uses his art later on to work out his issues. Mm-hmm. Early on, Mr. Natural, you will be familiar with him if you've seen a T-shirt with "Keep on Trucking" written on it. Because although that never actually appears anywhere in this collection, he's the long-bearded, squat mystic of underground comic book fame. He is almost the poster boy, I would suggest, of the underground comic scene of the 1960s. He is a madcap mystic who starts off life in the desert, but soon really becomes a foil for, I think, essentially a version of Robert Crumb, who goes by the name of Flaky Foont. And the vast majority of the stories are a dialogue between Mr. Natural and Flaky Foont, basically where Flaky Foont is a product of the 60s. He's not a full-blown hippie, but he's part of that generation. He wants to drop out, tune in, and be a DJ, whatever it is. In a way, he's a very middle-class hippie. And I would presume at the time that many of the, you know, there are a lot of people who dabbled in the scene, the feeling of the 1960s. And basically Mr. Natural holds a mirror up to that and deconstructs many of deconstructs in a way the hippie philosophy, or maybe arguably Mr. Natural is a real hippie.
Mm-hmm.
But he certainly has a cynical, not always abrasive, but a very cynical, wry take on the world that he finds himself inhabiting in the late 60s and early 70s with Flaky Foont. And much of the themes of those early stories are very similar. And they're good fun. I mean, they're very much what I enjoy about the underground comic scene. To me, this is sort of, I've spoken before about my relationship with underground comics and so forth. I find them a very comfortable and still very alluring place to inhabit. This collection gets more problematic when you get into the 1980s. And at that point, Robert Crumb is starting to work out his issues with women through his work. And we get introduced, I beg your pardon, to Devil Girl.
Oh, I know Devil Girl.
Who is a caricature, I think, of all of Crumb's darkest fantasies about dominatrix women. And some of the... It starts off by... She's this sort of mad, insane woman that Flaky Foont becomes obsessed by. She's a sort of acolyte of Mr. Natural. Flaky Foont becomes obsessed by her. the relationship becomes darker and more abusive as the stories go on, to the point where Mr. Natural, at a point where Funt's obsession is bordering on insane, he presents to Funt a version of Devil Girl that has had her head removed, mm-hmm. apparently, the neck capped, and he is able to work out his desires and frustrations on her, and then also his anxieties as a result. It turns out Mr. Natural's done something to her that shrunk her head and made it go inside her body, and she recovers. It is, by any modern measure, mm-hmm. and I think even in the 80s, really, when he was doing it, it's disturbing. A very worrying view of a man's attitude towards women. However, if you're buying this book and you're reading it and you know anything about Robert Crumb, you know what you're getting. And frankly, it's right on the bloody cover as well, to be perfectly honest with you. So, not one for the kiddies, maybe. Mm. But I think if you understand where Crumb is, you understand what it's about. You don't necessarily have to agree with his view. You don't necessarily have to be comfortable with that. But it is a very interesting, especially the work of the 60s and 70s, I find very interesting. Anthropological look at that particular time in history. It's an interesting window into where the underground thinking maybe of the 60s was at that time. And later on provides a window into someone's very strange relationship with women.
Mm-hmm.
The Book of Mr. Natural has been republished again recently in a very pleasant...
That's a really nice edition.
Really nice, yeah. Hardback edition. It's $19.99, somewhat cheaper from Amazon and other large retailers, should you wish. If you like the underground comic book scene of the 60s and 70s, I think it's probably one for the collection. It's not like, one for the faint-hearted, though.
It's from an archaeological perspective.
It is very much
these
so.
These comics are interesting to you from a historical perspective, aren't they?
I still dig them, even if, like, you know, I don't mind a comic that makes you go, oh, I'm not sure about that.
I think that we accept that there are people whose insights and views are very different, almost monstrous to us. Yeah. And I think that it's probably more interesting and useful reading something where someone is, if misguidedly, directly interfacing and examining how they feel about that stuff, than, say, someone who's writing a detective story that just happens to have a lot of this stuff in it. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. And it is fascinating to see. I think one of the things that I enjoy, maybe a foolish word to use, about Crumb is the forensic honesty mm-hmm. that goes into his work and his using his art to work out these demons in his head. Demons is the issues that he's obviously got in his head, the thoughts he's got in his head. It's so breathtakingly, it's mm-hmm. shockingly honest.
Does he loathe anyone more than himself, really?
Oh, good God, no.
I always find it interesting looking at his art style when you see, did he have two brothers or?
I think so. We only meet.
One of them killed himself.
Yeah, and there's only one in the documentary. I'm not entirely sure.
When you see the, I think in the documentary he refers to one of his brothers as being a far better artist and cartoonist than him, but that's the one I think that has. I hate to say that he killed himself if he's actually still alive, but who had much more severe mental health issues. And when you see Robert Crumb's really finely detailed line work, which I kind of took at face value until I saw the documentary, and then you see his brother's work, which starts out very similar, and then the detail and the lines, as he progressively gets worse, just starts to take over until each page is literally just this finely detailed, tiny, it's all lines.
Sure.
It made me appreciate Robert Crumb's art a lot more for some reason, because you start to see the mind behind it a little bit more. It's weird.
It's hard not to be drawn into it, without a shadow of doubt.
We should mention then, because I don't think we have on the podcast, even though we did just before we started talking. If we're talking about anachronistic comics, there are two podcasts. I've listened to one of them. We both listened to one of them. And you've listened to one of them that are worth mentioning. One is the Magnum Cast. I didn't know that there was a second episode of that yet.
So there's a zero and a one where they review the first, which I'm part of the way through, but very much enjoying it so far. That's Luke. Help me out with Luke's surname.
Can you remember?
Luke and Kiha, who do that. Kiha, obviously, who's contributed on several occasions. And again, Peter Hammerson and David, who I know has been talking about this, finally got me by talking about it to download Rachel and...
Rachel Edidin. Is it Rachel? No.
Yes. Yeah, it Rachel is. Edidin. I'm trying to... Oh, God. I know this straight off the top of my head. Hold on, Nick. You can edit this so it makes me sound like I actually know what I'm talking about rather than being the great bumbling forgetful fool. Rachel and Miles explain the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
If you've left all of this in, there will be at least one listener who's been shouting the title for at least the last 30 seconds.
Might leave it in just for that.
So sorry, David, but Rachel and Miles explain the X-Men. It's not really an issue by issue. Recapping of the X-Men, they're starting in the Silver Age, doing exactly what it says in the title, explaining the X-Men, really know their subject, they're excellent presenters, give each other an awful lot of space. It's a really, really polished, well put together podcast with extremely knowledgeable and likeable hosts, and I've listened to all three episode so far, and I'm really desperate to get hold of next one. It's really, really good. David Wynn was right.
They sound good.
Yeah, they are good. Yeah.
You can also listen to Two Grown Men, which is a great podcast.
Yeah, probably don't listen to that anywhere near Rachel and Miles Explain the X-Men, though.
Or Magnum Cast.
Or Magnum Cast.
It'd be horrible if you were damning with faint praise other podcasts by really going on about Rachel and Miles Explain the X-Men.
That's true. No, that would be horrible. No, sorry, the Magnum Cast is excellent. We've mentioned it previously.
Yeah.
I'm aware of that. No, the Magnum Cast is excellent, really good fun. And we were talking before we started the podcast today that both of us would quite like the idea of getting hold of the episodes of Magnum
and
watching along, because they intend to talk about every episode of Magnum in order. They did mention actually it could take, I think, something like 15 years
to do
that, because they're doing it once a month. But yeah, that'd be quite cool. I like the idea of that. So I may see how much the box set costs on Amazon or another large web-based store.
Maybe one that isn't killing comics, eh, James?
Yeah, maybe. I'd probably be a... I'm going to start the hashtag WeHateComics.
I'm just wondering how badly comics would be fucked if it wasn't for all of the graphic novel sales that have probably gone through Amazon in the last 10-15 years.
I wouldn't want to speculate, and
They've probably done a lot for comics. Only because they want a profit.
I mean, I don't know how to say this, Nick. You've really got a boner for Amazon. I don't know what that's all about.
It's not so much a boner, but as far as they are largely doing capitalism right. They're very, very effective at it. They offer a service. They do a good job of it. And I don't know.
I think at the point where we are almost about to get into a conversation about capitalism is the point where you say... I provided the sweetest segue I've ever done there for you.
I have
and
to...
You chose to just fucking ignore it. I'm crestfallen.
True confessions time. Between no longer working in a comic shop and starting doing this podcast, most of my comic intake was coming from Amazon. So I was very much a trade person.
You couldn't
person.
Let it go, could you? You had to stay on the dick of Amazon. You had that beautiful segue I provided to you, but you're like, no, I'm going to carry on sucking Amazon's dick because I love it.
Why are you assuming that Amazon's male?
And nothing you're going to do. Oh.
Yeah, what are you saying? Amazon's a highly successful... business. Why are you assuming it's male? Hey?
Oh, yeah, no, of course, no, that's why. You're so busy with Amazon's dick in your mouth that you totally ignored that. So I'm gutted. Oh, I can't leave this thought unsaid. Why can't you go to fucking Tesco's or, like, your local one-stop? you know, you're killing Sainsbury's. You know that, don't you?
Am I?
Yeah. Poor old Walmart.
Thank you to our contributor. You're brilliant and very generous with your time.
Thank you to Steve Bishop for filling in last week. Thank you to Steve for filling in last week.
Thank you, listener. As always, you're ace and so patient, so very, very patient. James, it's time for us to go.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Explosives.